Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Overlord by Matthew Peed, narrated by Tristan Morris. Chapter 1. Helicelia. Staring out the window as the airship slowly lowered itself to the air dock, I scoffed at the sight before me. Marquis Valimar's airship was on prominent display, anchored next to the mountain wall nearby. The vessel had been too large for the air dock at its current size. For such a quaint little village to have an air dock at all. I guess some people liked to overestimate themselves by overreaching for things they shouldn't be allowed to have. Rubbing the bridge of my nose, I sighed.
So this is the mudhole I have to spend the next few weeks of my life in.
I dreaded the thought. I doubted they even had a decent inn.
Robia Valley, my lady, said one of my attendants.
Leading the necromancers from this tiny valley was going to be a nightmare, and I hadn't had the time to get some of the more useful attendants before coming, either. I bared my teeth at the man, annoyed that he had spoken without waiting for me to tell him to do so.
Whatever its name, I frankly don't care. Find and tell the Marquis his fiancée is here. Now.
The man bowed, almost hitting his head on the desk.
Right away.
He jetted from the room as if his ass was on fire. That was more like it. I directed my gaze at another set of servants.
You two, find our acquaintances. The keeper says they are all alive.
All necromancers had their souls bound to a special object back in the former capital. That allowed my group to know when an operative died. With how limited our communications were, that was the best way to keep tabs on our people.
As you command.
The pair, disguised to be a married couple, made their way out of the quarters of the airship. Being a countess came with its benefits, but even I didn't own an airship. This was simply a chartered flight. At least I hadn't been forced to sleep in a communal section of the ship. I would sooner take a carriage than slum it.
Jesus,
I called the shapeshifter.
Yes,
the man in question asked. He was disguised as one of the airship's staff. The man he was impersonating, very likely dead somewhere in a ditch. My eye twitched at his annoying tone of non-servitude. But when dealing with a man who could become anyone he wanted, it was best to hide my frustration.
I want you to investigate the tower. Obviously the group sent here failed to take control of the thing. Perhaps you'll have a better chance.
Sure, I can poke around for a bit.
He held his hand out. When I just stared at it, he shook it. I suppressed my growl and handed over a bag of gold. I swore I would kill him one of these days, but sadly, his usefulness was greater than that desire for the moment. Less than an hour later, the man sent to find Valimar returned.
His lordship wishes to speak with you.
I stood up and straightened my dress. It wouldn't do for a noblewoman to be seen in any state of disarray.
Good. Hopefully we can leave this dump and be back to our original plan.
One that ended with a very sharp dagger sticking from the heart of the good Marquis. My guards formed up, and we made our way out of the airship. I wasn't the only noble arriving today. There had been at least four others on the airship with me. The fact that the Marquis had been staying here had drawn more than one eye to the valley. Those who wanted to get in good with the Marquis were working the woman who had taken up lordship here for all that she was worth. It made me want to grind my teeth, considering that the bitch's father had already been a duke before she'd come to this country. The work I put in for the cause, for my family, for our ambition. The fates must have been laughing the entire time to give her so much so easily while making me struggle. Well, I couldn't say I didn't get a fair amount of power in return. We approached the Marquis's airship, and I wiped the annoyance from my face and put on the mask of the perfect lady I had developed. The court was the one place where one wrong word could result in all your hard work being flushed down the drain. You had to be on everyone's side and no one's side at the same time. A servant bowed to me once we climbed on the deck.
Right this way, my lady.
Thank you.
It always helped to be nice to the staff of others. You never knew when they might slip you a juicy piece of information that could tip the scales your way. Plus, they were easier to get rid of than spies that could change their faces at will. For those closest to you, a compliance spell was safer when it came to secrets. I was escorted through the hull of the ship until we came to the conference hall. Marquis Valimar sat on a throne-like chair at the back of the room, with his guards surrounding him, as per usual. One person I had never seen before was sitting next to him. She was quite beautiful, for a La Croix woman, at least. No match for my looks, of course, but plenty to get men to do what she wanted.
Lady Helicilia Fosen, Valimar said. It is a pleasure that you have come to visit me in this out-of-the-way place.
He looked to the woman at his side.
No offense. None was taken until you said something, she replied, patting his arm.
Despite her words, her eye did twitch ever so slightly. I narrowed my eyes, my mask momentarily cracking before I recovered. I coughed to clear my throat.
Why wouldn't I come here to be with my fiancé?
I asked with a pleasant smile that made most men want to drop to the ground and start begging for me. Marquis Valimar rubbed his head with a grimace.
About that, I have decided to go against my father's decision. I plan to wed Viscountess Luella Coates here.
What? What do you mean?
Equal parts rage and horror filled my chest. Not only was a man choosing some mud noble over me, but my family's plan for the last several decades was coming unraveled. I needed a sacrifice of his caliber to enact the magical ritual that would bring the continent to its knees.
Believe me, this has nothing to do with you. I let my father continue with his little idea of marrying me off because I had found no one who took my fancy. Luella here has taken said fancy. Why else do you think I stayed here for as long as I have?
I frowned, unable to think of what to say. With a barely suppressed growl, I turned on my heel and walked away. I wouldn't put up with this. It looked like there were some adjustments that needed to be made to the plan. I quickly covered my left eye to avoid the risk of people seeing the green flame that leaked from the corner. Some power came at a price.
Chapter 2. Luella.
Watching the woman storm away, I turned to Valimar. Are you sure this was the right idea? I had no love for the woman, but I didn't hate her either. I'd only heard rumors and whispers. From what I knew, she was about as good a woman as any of them out there. Even if this was a charade to get out of a marriage to the woman, it seemed like an incredibly rude way to do so. Helicilia was well within her rights to be upset. I knew I would be, if my fiancé told me they didn't even want to give it a chance. Marquis Valimar just waved his hand with a lazy motion.
She'll get over it. If anything I've heard about her is true, it's that she is extremely resourceful and resilient.
I just shook my head and leaned back in the chair. Regret from agreeing to this filled me. Not only had I successfully pissed off an up-and-coming noble in Thonica, but one of Valimar's own guards couldn't suppress the glare she was sending my way. Apparently, the man was dense to anything he didn't wish to see, or he was fully aware and kept her around for that reason.
Will there be anything else? I asked, standing up. I have a considerable amount of work to attend to.
Valimar stood up as well and grabbed my hands before I could react.
Yes. I would be pleased if you joined me for dinner tonight.
I caught the no argument in his eyes and sighed before putting on a smile for the audience. We had to keep up appearances.
As you wish.
He released me with just a kiss on the hand. I had to restrain myself from running as I left the room. Relief filled me when I found Esla and Raven out in the hall. They were looking at me with worried expressions.
"What did you guys do to that woman?"
Raven asked, with a thumb pointing down the hallway.
"I'm worried she's going to murder anyone who gets in her way."
"Viscountess Helicilia, the Marquis's fiancé. Former fiancé, I mean," I explain, shaking my head. "She was just informed that I had taken her place."
"Wow. Actually introducing your new lover to your former lover. That takes guts,"
Raven said, laughing. "Welcome to high society," I replied with a grimace.
"Come, we have other people we need to meet today."
I rubbed my face with my hands to try to remove some of the stress.
"I just hope those meetings go better than this facade."
We made our way through the Marquis's airship and were soon back outside. Within the air dock were several new ships. Three had shown up this morning, carrying nobles, supplies, workers, slaves, and all manner of other content. More than a few merchants had gotten wind of the commercial opportunities the valley and dungeon were offering. The mine alone was already outproducing most of the mines in the north of Thonica. Not only were the ores of a high concentration, but the Rakshasa bodies could be broken down to minerals, and their body parts made for good materials. Not to mention the mountain of gold that Greed had been sitting on. Once harvested, it had been estimated to equal close to 1 million gold coins. I wondered how the next set of floors would go over with the merchants. A race of monster never seen before had greeted the divers. They possessed a few straight horns coming from their heads and resembled goblins with colored hides. Of the few that had been seen, there were red, green, and black ones so far. The Oni, as they called themselves, appeared to be crafters. They had hundreds of workshops that all ranged in size. The better they were at crafting, the bigger the shop they had. Even the smallest shop that had been found made gear that was levels above what was being made by the blacksmiths in town, or the neighboring towns, for that matter. Their only competition might have been the dwarves. Tightening my grip on my staff, I couldn't help but worry about what we found next in the dungeon. I glanced at the weapon, noting it was something I had bought from the Oni. I wasn't sure how it was crafted, but I'd never felt my lightning work with a weapon as well as this staff. Only the center was made from metal. The bottom and top were made of a clear white crystal. I was so lost in my thoughts that I hadn't realized we were still standing in front of the Marquis's airship.
What are we waiting for?
I ordered it since the nobles were set to arrive today. Should be here any minute,
Esla said cryptically. I looked at her with questions in my eyes, but decided to wait. A few minutes later, a carriage, pulled by 2 tier 2 horses, was unloaded from one of the nearby airships. A Golden Dawn member soon steered it on its way over to us.
My lady, your chariot awaits.
This is a surprise, but an ever-welcome one, I said, looking at the delicate craftsmanship in awe.
The carriage was clearly made by a master. We climbed in, and I was pleased to see that this was indeed a high-end model. There were several magic runes that controlled the temperature and comfort of the ride, and there was even a barrier spell that could be activated in the presence of danger. It was the middle of summer, and the valley, while cooler than the rest of the continent, was still hot enough to cause a sweat just from standing. Being able to get out of the sun was a blessing.
How much did you have to spend for this beauty?
Raven's question was one I was dreading, though equally curious about.
Don't tell our dwarf friends, but there was some mithril acquired from the Greed Raid. I used just over 1 ounce to acquire this beauty, as Raven puts it,
Esla said with a smirk at the woman.
Are you sure that was wise?
Mithril wasn't just lying around. It was so rare that people were often found dead due to the mineral.
I might not technically be a noble, but I've had my share of dealings with them. I covered my tracks.
When we finally just stared at her, she finally sighed and continued.
I went through a Thonican merchant by the name of Elder Sky. He's an elf who always keeps his word, and few people would think about double-crossing.
The name sounded familiar. Sadly, I wasn't too versed on Thonican merchant lines. There were enough nobles I needed to keep track of that merchants took a back seat for the most part.
Elder Sky, is he one of the merchants coming to the valley?
Esla shook her head.
No, not that I've heard, at least. From what the merchants that have arrived tell me, the council plans to keep using the central pass.
I placed my cheek in my hand and looked out the window at the passing scenery. If they came here, they would bring more wealth than this area had ever seen before.
That's a pity. Let's plan for that to change next year.
I leaned back into the cushions and enjoyed the ride back to town. Other than becoming the Marquis's future bride, I planned to meet the rest on my terms. As we passed the future nobles district, I couldn't help looking at the beautiful cathedral. Even with the temperature being as high as it was as cool a fall day on the grounds of the cathedral as a few of the people we'd sent into the place said it was.
How many people have joined Nyx? I asked, glancing back to the two. Our last report stated close to 2,000.
Before I could ask, she continued, Of that number, 1,500 are slaves. The rest are people disillusioned by Leilun. I was surprised by the number. More so of the slaves than the disillusioned. The number of disillusioned sounded low to me, if I was being honest. More than a few people had gotten tired of the operation of the church in the last decade or so. The necromancer threat bringing to head many issues that people had been content to ignore.
When did that many slaves manage to get to the valley?
Several people who came here to sell their slaves sold their entire stock to the church, while former slaves went to nearby towns and villages to buy every slave they could. The resources of the Church of Nyx are deep.
What is the town population at? I asked. Last time I'd checked was before the tournament. We were sitting at 6,000 or 7,000. It was hard to get an accurate count with people coming in every day, sometimes in less than legal ways.
With the recent uptick in newcomers, somewhere in the area of 20,000.
So, almost 10% of the town are followers of Nyx now, I mumbled,
more intending to say it to myself than out loud.
Keep an eye on the situation as best you can.
The last thing we need is for there to be a religious purge by Leilun on our doorstep. Looking the man in front of me over, I gave the best smile I could.
Welcome to Robia Valley. I have already directed the wandering elf to give you the best room during your stay, I said.
It helped that my childhood friend ran the place. She better enjoy all the business I was sending her way, I thought.
Good. I'm glad to see you know how to treat your betters, the man said, crossing his arms, though it was quite a challenge for him.
My eye twitched, but I suppressed it. I decided to play my newest and quite powerful card.
I see. I will be sure to tell the Marquis that I am unworthy of him later tonight during dinner.
You know how Valimar likes to hear everyone's opinion. The fat man choked before he waved his hands quickly.
Wait, you didn't let me finish. I was trying to say that you know how to treat your betters, as in, I was hoping there was a place I could gamble a little.
My smile never wavered.
I see. I know that a few of the brothels have embraced the sport. You should check those locations when you get the chance.
The man wiped the sweat from his head as he sighed.
Yes, I will do just that. Thank you for welcoming me to your town, but I think I'll retire for the afternoon.
He quickly made his way out of my office. How I wished I could order the man taken to jail for threatening me, but I had to pick my battles. I used a quill to push the item, nothing more than a paperweight, to the side, knocking it off the table into the box of others.
If it's not worthless, it's cursed, I mumbled,
not wanting to risk touching the item with my bare skin. If it wasn't cursed, it could very well be poisoned. I'd already had to send one person to the jails.
Missing noble life, my lady? Esla asked with a chuckle.
She sent for a guard to take the box. After it was checked, they were free to take whatever they wanted.
Not in the slightest. Annoying pricks, the lot of them.
I sighed and rubbed my forehead.
Just go get the next one.
Once she left, I turned to Raven.
Errol back yet?
He will be a few more days, just like I told you this morning,
she answered, not removing the book that rested on her face as she lay on the sofa. The exhaustion of the day had made me forget I had already asked her. I groaned, but didn't press the issue. It had only been a week or so, but it felt like it was starting to physically hurt not being able to see him. Was that normal? How did people who sent their lover off to war survive for months or even years at a time without seeing each other? I just moaned in discomfort and turned to the door as the next noble made their way in. Chapter 3. Regan Errol. Looking over the floating city of Jade Wind, I felt a mild disappointment that no one had noticed us yet. It had been over a week, and my aura encompassed half the city already. If it wasn't for the fact that I was splitting all the mana I was gaining from this location between the four cores, I could have already hit Tier 3 on my main core. That said, it was steadily going through the levels. I only had four more before I could break through, even with sending mana to the other cores. I rather enjoy the air here, don't you, Julie? I commented, taking a deep breath of the salt-filled breeze. Jade Wind sat close to 2,000 meters over the ocean, which cleared the air some, but the salt tinge was still there. It was one of the few memories I actually missed from Earth, my former tower prison being near the ocean. Julie was currently sitting in the center of the platform, with the subcore floating above her.
I prefer the air back in my lord's main dungeon.
I'd found out shortly after her stay at the floating city started that she was terrified of heights. I gave her a grin before shaking my head. Tormenting her had become a small pastime of mine. I had learned a lot during the 2 weeks since the necromancers had placed my core here. For example, the flight core that operated in the Marquis' airship was stripped down much further than I had expected. The ones that made up what the gnomes called their Royal Air Force were nothing short of amazing. This also came with the realization that they didn't know how to reproduce them completely, as I only found four in the entire city. One of these, which held the city up, was built for another purpose, but I hadn't gained access to any historical records or information yet. I couldn't know the purpose of the device, only that the central tower had indeed been a ship at one point. The only conclusion I could come up with from conjecture was that something had forced the gnomes to flee in the past, and they'd improvised.
I still can't believe no one can see us up here, Rockross noted from beside me as he looked out over the city.
I just shrugged. It didn't surprise me in the least.
People have a tendency not to look up. Not to mention, in a place like this, they believe it's impenetrable.
Plus, I had an illusion that hid the spot at the top of the tower from view. It would take a strong mind, and even stronger skill to see through it.
Rockross nodded in understanding at my conclusion.
I suppose you're right. I remember not looking above me often when I was comfortable in a town.
Exactly the same. But even if they did look up, they couldn't see through the illusion I placed over the top of the tower. The only person who might be able to see us is someone who can physically see mana, or even then, they would have to be able to decipher the multiple mana flows that are rippling around the tower.
You're amazing, my lord, Julie called, unmoving from her spot.
Her desire to leap on me was lost to her fear of heights. I was having a hard time believing she had truly been a demented necromancer before this. I ignored her and pulled up all the information that I had gained just from spreading my aura through the city. My dungeon mind allowed me to visualize information however I desired, and for this, I was having them appear as pages on a screen. Once quantified, the page count came close to 7,000, and that number was steadily growing. While much of it was repetitive due to the way my current magic was absorbing the information, I doubted the number would go down much even after it was sorted. The gnomes were just that advanced. Or, to be more precise, they had been that advanced. They had fallen into a period where knowledge was constantly being lost as masters died over the centuries. Experts back on Earth had thought that was close to happening to the human race as machines took over the world's agriculture and infrastructure. Not that they ever got a chance to find out.
Something humorous, Master, Rockross asked, noticing my mood.
Yes, but I don't feel like explaining, I replied. Dismissing the lists of information, I tapped my chin as I thought about what I should do. I really needed to create some help, with minds that would be capable of processing this data. I could do it myself, but that would take weeks, if not months, if the repetitive data were more than I expected. Needless to say, I had other matters I wanted and needed to attend to. I'm heading back to my main core for a while. Keep up the watch. You know how to call me if something happens. With a thought, I reappeared back in my core room at the top of my tower in the valley. The adventurers were starting to pour into the Envy workshops, and I felt it would be time to expand soon. I only had Sloth and Gluttony to work with before I would need to switch to a new theme. Since only lust was between me and the adventurers, I would need to do that soon. Set appeared as soon as my mind returned to the dungeon.
Master!
Set? What is it? I asked. She almost sounded worried. There was little evidence to support that, but her usual deadpan voice had just the tiniest drop of inflection to it to concern me. Confirming my theory, she explained,
Several of the adventurers are getting close to the entrance of the garden. I fear not having more layers between us.
I had just had the same thought, but it wasn't good to show others your worries. Fear doesn't suit you, unless you're the one causing it. I have plenty of mana. I will take care of it today. Not able to think of a way to spin Sloth to my advantage, I just focused on the inhabitants of the new floor being aggressive to anyone who disturbed their sleep. I went with another fog-covered city, much like the Gothic City of Wrath. It still spanned a space of almost twice that of Gothic City. I pointed to the center of the newly formed city and imagined the new boss to watch over this place. I pulled all the magic engrams and constructs that I had learned from all the things I'd killed up to this point. Even I wasn't completely sure what I would ultimately create. The magic circle formed and grew to the size of a building. Like I'd told Set, I had plenty of mana, so I allowed it to pour into the circle. When it reached what would equate to about 500,000 points of mana, it finally died down. I waved my hand, as there was a considerable amount of smoke, and walked toward the center of the circle. "Where is the boss?" I asked out loud when I didn't see anything. Surely with that much mana I should have created a slumbering giant or dragon. Something that could soak up that much mana had to be massive.
There, master, Set replied, pointing to the ground.
I narrowed my eyes in the direction she pointed. Sleeping, without a care in the world, was a small girl who looked barely 11 or 12. She had a horn in the center of her head and large wolf ears. Electric silver hair ran down her back and fanned out around her. She wore a pair of pajamas, of all things. They were the type that covered the entire body, only showing off the face. If it hadn't been for the skulls over the outfit, then it might have been considered cute. Upon inspecting the outfit, I could tell from just looking at it that it could take a tank shell with ease, let alone the magic and bladed weapons of this world. I reached down and tapped her face.
Hey, Sloth, wake up.
In a motion that I only barely managed to dodge, she whipped out a pistol and fired where my head had been. The building that had been directly behind me was vaporized from the subsequent explosion. The girl simply rolled over and continued to sleep without missing a beat. To be honest, I was more surprised that she could sleep on the cobblestone plaza than the fact that she had attacked me.
Master!
I glanced at Set, who was surprised.
She is tier 3, and fairly advanced at that. It would be hard for us to subdue her.
I noticed, I said with a grimace. I waved my hand and teleported the girl to the boss location for the floor. Since I was able to do so, it meant she was loyal to the dungeon. The attack must have been a reflex. I chuckled as I thought about the adventurers when they tried to get through this floor. Stretching, I turned to Set. What do you think would happen if I installed alarms that rang constantly until the adventurers were done?
Sample complete. Ready to continue?